Let's turn our attention to the final show, and I've asked panelists to kick off on each one so far, and as there's four shows and four of us, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I was riveted by this show. I've known Morris's work for years, never taken it terribly seriously, and I think that the what I have not known before or taken proper note of is her work as a filmmaker, which is really almost an almost equal collaboration, I felt, with her now ex-husband, Liam Gillick, providing the soundtrack for Rio. I think I've got the emphasis wrong, that I've always seen there are, you know, one could say there are painters who make films and there are filmmakers who make artworks. And so if, say, Wim Wenders is an example of the latter, and so when you go to James Cohan Gallery, you're almost sort of buying souvenirs of a great film director, then maybe, say, well, Julian Schnabel is obviously a pretty serious filmmaker, but those who have the sort of one shot at Hollywood, whether it's Laurie Simmons or David Salley, you could say, well, no, they're painters who've made a film. Hitherto, I think wrongly, thought of Morris as a painter who sometimes makes a film, and I just came out of the show, twice, really sensing that the paintings look a little better now than they did before, and the film was a revelation, not of quite the Christian Marclay kind of level of revelation, but it was a very positive experience. We'll go on to perhaps describe the film in some more analysis. But anybody want to shoot me down, or anybody less than exhilarated with the film?
Did you stay for the whole hour and a half?
I did, and it went quickly. I mean, you warned me about the fact that it was going to be an hour and a half, and I was thinking, I've never looked at a Sarah Morris painting for a minute and a half. Am I going to look at a Sarah Morris painting film for an hour and a half? And not only did I find myself staying for the whole hour and a half, but then went out and the paintings began to look very different. I thought I was going to just go in and out with the paintings in the film. But no, I thought it was really, it had narrative, it had lack of narrative, it had an abstraction, it was a very sumptuous film.
How did it change your idea of the paintings? That's what I would like to know.
Well, we got a new moderator and a new guest. No, that's fair enough when the moderator suddenly becomes a guest. Somebody has to take over, yeah. But my conscience as an ex-moderator tells me that I'm talking quite a lot, and Becky, I will come back to Dennis's question, but Raphael, what did you make of Sarah Morris?
I made of Sarah Morris's show exactly what I've made of her previous shows, which is that I found the films so much more powerful than the paintings, which I find almost without interest as paintings, very unconvincing. To me, the paintings seem like sort of really great, brilliant graphic art, but as objects, I can't engage with them. And it's not just because they're, you know, smooth, slickly painted, hard-edged paintings. It's just, I feel, someone said earlier that they were very curious about the decisions, wanting to know about the decisions that Reinhard Mucha makes in making his sculptures. And I always feel like when I am in front of a work of art and I feel like I want to know why the artist has made every choice, every decision. And that, for me, is a sign that I'm becoming involved, that something is going on for me with that work. With Sarah Morris's paintings, I really have no curiosity whatsoever about why certain forms are deployed in a certain way or the palette. And I think a lot of her paintings, I think, are sort of appropriated, found designs from sources that are relevant to whatever her larger subject matter is. But I at the same time, I thought the film was really riveting, and I too, it was, it went very quickly. And the sense of movement is one of the things that really hits you in the film. And also, you know, her work, I think she's trying to say something about architecture and modernity and the relationships of people to their surroundings and to the cultural and social structures. All of that really comes through very strongly in the films, and yet for me doesn't in the paintings. So I've had in some ways an opposite. It didn't change my feeling about not being interested in the paintings, but it reinforced my enjoyment and being impressed with the films.
Yes, Becky, we actually found ourselves in the film together at one point. Lots of motifs there, aren't there? There's this very rich soundtrack. I don't know that Liam Gillick is classed as a composer. I think it's on the computer, but composers use computers, of course. But it's a rather compelling soundtrack that really abstracts. Sometimes complements, but usually abstracts what one's looking at. In the carnival scene, the parades that the culmination of the film. Clearly, those parades have a tremendous amount of music and noise that go with them. We lose those and get instead the kind of frenzied sort of disco trance type music of sound effects of Liam Gillick. But just however short or long a time you would spend there, you'd see cats, for instance, pussy cats, very well-groomed ones in the home of a retired supermodel, and very grungy-looking ones in a sort of public place. And there are sometimes, you know, there are things about class, there are things about Rio, but it's the erotics of the city. But yeah, this is some question. What did you make of it?
I absolutely agree. I was also riveted by the film, but also by the paintings. I think they work together really beautifully for me. And she's an artist who I feel like can use two completely different mediums with completely different conventions to actually communicate an experience that's very cohesive in a certain way, which is an experience of kind of at once being really seduced by color and surface and abstract worlds and intersections, but also having a kind of fear at the same time of what might happen if you fully succumb to this world. And I think that really was my experience in front of the paintings and while watching the film. I think that I agree with the soundtrack abstracts the entire content of the film. Not only do we not hear the sounds of the carnival, but we can't hear anyone speaking, and there's often a lot of people speaking. We don't hear the sound of the street. So we have this sort of bombardment of images, basically the same kinds of ingredients that go into the paintings: color, surface, shininess versus not shininess. And we have to kind of make sense of that experience.
Would you pay to go see this film in a movie theater?
That's a good question. It's not a narrative film, so probably not. I mean, when I go to the movies, I'm usually looking for something more akin to narrative, but I agree that the time really went by. I was so captivated by just the flow of images. And I found that I was thinking about so many things while watching the film, thinking about just organization in general, how things are organized, how cities are organized, how people are organized, how factories are organized. And I really appreciated having that kind of flood of thoughts that accompanied a flood of images.
I would have paid having seen it. I wouldn't pay in advance to go and see it. But having seen it, and you then said, oh, by the way, you have to pay. Well, I would say that question is a cruel one, because it works. It could work the other way around. You could say, would you contribute to the making of a film of your favorite director that you'd really like to see. Say your favorite director is Wim Wenders, and they say, well, if you, Dennis Carden, could give the price of a Dennis Carden painting to Wim Wenders, he will make his next film for you. No, that's because that is, that's in fact reversing your question. This is art, and we're used to not paying for art.
No,
or at least I am.
My question really goes to the experience of going to art galleries and looking at art. I will say that I was quite captivated with the 25 minutes or so that I spent looking at the film, and I would have liked to have seen the whole thing, but I think that there's a certain expectation when you go around to look at art galleries that you can have the whole experience and think about it and spend, you know, as much time as you want. You can control the amount of time that you spend with the experience, but which you still can do in this case too. But I was irritated that this, you know, after 20 minutes, and I didn't even come in at the beginning, and I thought like I would, you know, come in from where I saw it and, you know, go till it started again and stuff like that. I just ducked out and said, well, how long is this? And it was like, you know, 180 minutes or something like, or, you know, it was 2 hours,
120,
90 minutes, right, I'm sorry. But I just thought like, you know, we're talking about an artist having a show in three parts, having an artist having your show that you have to, you know, look at for,
90
minutes.
Plus 3 minutes for the paintings.
Yeah. 3 minutes for the paintings, yeah.
Right.
Unlike Becky, I did not really. And I thought that, well, either you want us to not look at the whole thing, you don't have any expectation that you're going to look at all things, so why make it, you know, that long, or that you do have an expectation to look, that you want people to look at the whole thing, in which case I'd say, like, her parents were way too praiseworthy of, you know, everything that she did, because it's...
Fair enough. But I have a question then for Raphael, who's seen more of the films than I think the rest of us on the panel, maybe. I did a little, you know, you can't see a Sarah Morris film on YouTube, but there are segments, but you can't experience it properly. But I did my best on my iMac with her films of Chicago and Beijing. And it seems to me that I want to know from Raphael, if you agree, that in Rio, she's really found her city. It just seemed to me, from the little I could see, maybe this, it seemed to make such good sense of her paintings for her to be in Rio.
I agree with you. I think this film does seem stronger, more successful. It might just be that she's becoming better at making films. She's had more experience doing them, and they're getting better and better. Or maybe there is something about the balance of the visual rhythms of Rio. But you know, I think one of the things that I think is true of her films is that they're, I mean, you think, looking at this, I thought a lot about access. Like, how did she get access to this, you know, the culmination of the Carnival Parade or the various sites? And I also was thinking about trying to reflect on what are the differences, I've never been to Rio, but like, what are the differences between Rio and New York, and how would an audience in Rio look at a film that she made in New York, and, you know, would they find some things exotic and or comic in our daily behavior? So I thought that I had this kind of interesting reversal going on, but I feel sometimes I wonder why she's attracted to the more cliched sites and subject matter in, and she does this, I think, in a lot of the films that she, in different places around the world, and very different, like Chris Marker's Saint-Soleil, which I was thinking of, which is a film, mostly, a lot of it is shot in Japan, and Marker tries as hard as he can to get out of the kind of away from the conventional tourist traps and kind of get into the unseen life. And she seems not to want to do that. She was really looking at
factor,
she had, like, you know, the daily life of factory workers. And I mean, I was really struck by that.
Maybe I left before that.
Yes, she has a rather compelling scene in a brewery. It's a brewery, and it's... I
let's see that.
Yeah, well, Becky and I saw it all, but I think that, sorry, you wanted to finish up something?
Oh, just, are we going to come back to the paintings again?
Yes, we can do, because I'll answer Dennis's question about the paintings, and I feel that I've always thought of her as being like a sort of Peter Halley light, in that they are sort of decor, but with some kind of conceptual underpinning that you could find out about if you wanted to. But actually seeing the films, you know, it's like, for me, when you look at photographs, it's the opposite of, with, say, Ellsworth Kelly or Sean Scully or Joe Fife, when you look at their photographs, they're finding in the world things that rhyme with what they've already found in their studio, in their paintings. And it seems to me that with Sarah Morris, it's the other way around, that... Or maybe actually, no, this is a more interesting prospect, that it's not the other way around, that she goes out into the social and political sphere, but finds formal things that perhaps are what she's playing with in her graphic decorations. And then it also seems telling and interesting to me that she imposes her kind of grids and lines and shapes on actual movie posters. For instance, Kill Bill, with then is the backdrop, the support for a Sarah Morris painting. And then that seems to me right, that there is this chemistry between the paintings and the films. The films have an abstraction to them. The paintings then have a kind of social hierarchy and possibilities of you know, more troublesome politics about them.
Yeah, I mean, I just, calling them decorations, it just, that's really what they were to me. And it they were more than that in that they found, it seemed like they were financing for her filmmaking. That, you know, I can make these high-priced objects, but I'll do what I really want to do, which is make these films. Because it seemed like in, you know, even 20 minutes of the film that I saw was so much more thinking and involvement with the world and stuff like that, that I just thought, like, you know, except for trying to raise money to do this, why waste your time, you know, like, designing these things?
Becky, you're the defender of the paintings. I mean, we're all, whether we love her or hate her here, we're sort of saying the paintings are ancillary to the film. What can you say? What can you tell us about the paintings? Do they really work the way an Albers or an Ellsworth Kelly or would work, or even a Stephen Westfall? Or what are they actually doing with form and decisions? Or are they? Does it operate on a different conceptual level?
I would say that they do operate similarly to the way that something like Albers would operate. I wouldn't say really Kelly so much, but for me, they're really about the potential of abstraction as a language to communicate, and as a language that in fact mirrors the world in many ways. And I think she makes that very clear with the movie posters, with the images on top of them, because we can actually see where design and abstraction seem to operate this sort of unlikely space together, where they both seem to take up some of the same ingredients: circles, grids, color, repetition. These are the same, you know, ingredients we've seen in the entire history of abstract painting, and yet they're these same ingredients that we're seeing in these various design motifs, in cityscapes, in architecture, in clothing, in human bodies, in everything that we can see around us. And the paintings helped me to kind of register this abstract thinking that was happening also in the film, because I was sort of having these different kinds of reactions to them at once. I think the color is really powerful and compelling. I also think that the kinds of abstract shapes that are interacting are very provocative because they look completely abstract, but they also look like details of machines, maps, any number of other kinds of things. They're all fragments, and I think fragmentation is something that's really interesting in her work. She's always showing this some sort of degree of fragmentation, whether it's a really close-up zoom in or it's a kind of farther away level of fragmentation. And the paintings as well always seem to suggest that they could extend beyond the borders of the frame.
Why paintings? I mean, why not just design them on a computer and print them out like as a movie poster? But like, you know, I mean, why?
To me, the paint's very, very present and,
really?
And luscious in a way. I mean, there's mattes and there's glossy paints and there's these black lines that kind of weave around everything, outlining. I mean, stenciling, I guess in a way, yes. Abstraction can be subjective. I don't know.
One of my problems with the paintings is they don't seem to propose any new way of thinking about painting or about form. They're like, because I feel like they're so based in or dependent on mid-20th century graphic design and very elegantly done. But I think that idea of appropriating modernist motifs is all, you know, that was done so much from, you know, going back to Peter Halley. And I think that...
Well, aren't they contemporaries, sort of?
No, she's younger, much, I think, quite a bit younger.
And I think this is, maybe this is a generation problem. I mean, when we came to the city, this is what painting kind of looked like or had looked like and was still, you know, Frank Stella's Protractor series was not that, you know, far in the distance, and he hadn't really gone into the bigger aluminum things yet. So this is what serious painting looked like to me. And so seeing it rear its ugly head again is just kind of...
Yeah, but I think that Halley was a conceptual painter and that Sarah Morris is a neo-conceptual painter. So that we are, you know, I'm sorry to sound, these categories may seem glib and arbitrary, but I'm not sure they actually are. And so I would defend the paintings by saying, don't take them so seriously and so what are their paintings? Because they are, they're artifacts that happen to use the same materials that sublime abstract painting could use and some of the same motifs, but they're not trying to be sublime paintings. They are, I think, extensions of, sort of souvenirs of, some of the ideas that are in the film. I mean, think about Niemeyer in the film. These are deconstructive in a way of the optimism of abstract painting, and they are basically, I think, you know, it's okay that they're rather thin and it's not merely okay that they're sort of thin decorations. It's part of their meaning, and it is part of their value. And their meaning, their value, is not the meaning and value that we would go to great abstract painting for, or even interesting conceptual painting for. It's neo-conceptual. They are there's the paintings, there's the posters, the film, and the hierarchy is inverted. The paintings are at the bottom, the film is at the top, and the posters are somewhere in the middle.
That's a brilliant defense of it. I don't know if you've convinced me, but I think that was a really well thought out, that's good.
I mean, I think that the project, her project to me is fairly similar to Peter Halley's. I guess I'm not scholars I'm not a scholar on either of them, but to me they both seem to deal with geometry and power and where those things sort of intersect and how color and design and geometry can both be very seductive, but can cause a sort of hypnosis and a kind of threat that could occur by submitting to them.
Right.
To me.
Excellent. I think we, and I know who's to blame, we have gone over a little, but I would like to give the, I'd like to hear from our audience. So there's Mallory Marder and there's Sarah Morris. We'll take comments as they come, doesn't matter which or both. Anybody has something to share us? Yes, Sarah, with us. Thank you.
Back to the earlier part of this, where we were looking at the prostitutes, sex workers, and what's clearly and obviously left out are the people that manage them, the pimps, the sex millionaires, whatever they are, that put all that together and then put them out. And the only time that the sex worker really responds to anything is when they're having sex. And then the only reason they do that is because the money comes in, they're paid off in a whole variety of ways by their managers. And I think that's such an important piece of this to take into consideration. Without it, the rest of it's very shallow for me.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Yes, lady at the back.
I just wanted to say, as a Brazilian artist, as living here a long time, I was very impressed with Sarah Morris's film because she conveys like the contradictions of society, as well as she does a beautiful job in the images, but the content itself was very striking to me. I wish I had found a way to say that, you know, it's always been mind-boggling how so many things exist at the same time. So I think maybe she found her subject matter because it is so ripe, it is so full of contradictions, and I think she does that really beautifully.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, the other side of the hall, Kathy. Please wait for the mic. Yeah.
There you go. I just can't resist saying it's probably not a very good idea to say it, but got the mic. To me, it's so clear that Sarah Morris's work is very feminine and that she's working in circles, and that the artists you compared her work to, like Peter Halley, Albers, that they're so right angled. They're so defined by that. And her work has this kind of, I don't know, a sort of very fluid, deft geometry. And it just seems, you know, sort of traditionally feminine. And there, I said it.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, some more. Yes, fantastic.
I just wanted to say that in the photographs of the women, I haven't seen the show, so I don't know if they look what it's like to experience it in person, but to me it seemed like those women feel really comfortable in their bodies, you know, that they just had this, they were working. It was a job and they were working, and I didn't expect any sort of emotional interaction, but I just really appreciated the fact that regardless of their size or shape, that they seemed really at home with what they were doing.
That's an interesting reading. Thank you. Yeah. I saw another hand go up towards the back. Yes.
I was just going to answer that. I don't know. I don't know if it was a question, but I thought Sarah Morris's paintings have to do with the Brazilian neo-concretist movement, which now has been resurfacing.
There was the neo-concretism of Brazilian mid-century modernism is referenced. Yeah.
Also, a lot of the titles had to do with things that were in the film. And I also wanted to say, I'm not quite, she must be very much into like power and connections, because the people she did interview and the things they were like, I made me wonder, how did she get access to all this? It was mind-boggling.
Yes, there are scenes with Oscar Niemeyer, which I think, I don't know if she shot them or if they are footage, but there's a section with Oscar Niemeyer, and then there's a visit to the home of the woman who had been I don't know her name, but she was a famous model in the 1960s. Do you know her name? Right. Thank you. Yeah.
The highest paid actress in Brazil is Camila Pitanga, and she has shots of them shooting the novelas, which are the 8 p.m. like powerhouses of yes. How social things happen.
Right. Now we know that there's a very famous and very well-paid Brazilian actress, and that the film is free. We'll all have to go and see it a third time. Audience, panel, thank you, and valiant workers here at the National Academy. Thank you very much, and see you around. See you on January the 24th. Have a great holiday.